Now, yesterday morning, over 90 members of the Venceremos Brigade, the African-American Association, and the U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange crossed the Canadian border into the United States. This was following a trip to Cuba aimed at challenging the travel ban imposed by the Bush administration. And now joining us to talk about that trip are on the West Coast, Shaka Barrows, and on the East Coast, we've got Naomi Gordon-Lobel, and Bonnie Massey, who are all part of this trip. It's just going to be a real honor to have all of you. Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
There we go. So everybody's just kind of going, whoa, everybody's all here at once. We're United East Coast, West Coast, and of course the Gulf Coast here, and wanted to say thank you to all of you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Definitely. Now, Bonnie, I wanted to ask you specifically, I wonder if you could tell people a little bit about the history and the political reasons why the brigades began these trips to Cuba.
Sure. Actually, the Venceremos Brigade is actually the oldest organization of solidarity with Cuba in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We started in 1869. During that time, the Cubans were going to go ahead and try to get the largest sugar sun harvest that they ever had in their history, which they were going for 10 million tons of sugar. And there's a big speech given by Fidel Castro on the Revolution Square and asking everybody in the country to be a part of this effort. And what that meant was that people who worked in factories and worked in schools and different places were going to have to come out of their job sites and go into the sugarcane fields. Like, everybody would take a shift. Everybody in the country would be part of really trying to make this harvest. And so a bunch of people from the U.S. had overheard, you know, and heard about this going on. And they said, we want to be able to help. We want to, you know, we see this revolution and we're seeing the politics that are going around in our country.
I got it.
We know that our government has been lying to us about what's going on in Vietnam, and we have an idea that it's the same thing going on in Cuba. We want to show our support. What can we do? And so it was figured out that groups of people from the U.S. would go down and participate in this sugar sun harvest. So that's what we did. That first brigade started in 1969, and hundreds of young people from the U.S. went over and worked in the fields with the Cubans for about a month, and then spent a month traveling. And then another group went over, and then we've had trips like that every year ever since then. The trips have changed a little bit. You know, they were 2 months back then. They were a little bit bigger. And now times are different. Things are different. So they're about 2 weeks long. But we stick to the same principles in that we still go down there and we do work. And then we also do travel, and we get to see a lot of different things firsthand and just learn the truth about what we see. And then in addition to that, we've never, ever asked for a license. That was kind of one of our founding principles, that was the idea that the U.S. government had no right to tell us that we couldn't go to Cuba and that we couldn't, you know, visit a neighboring friendly country. And so, you know, from 1969 through to now, which is our 35th anniversary, we've never asked for a license to travel. We support Cuba's sovereignty and Cuba's right to determine its own destiny, and that's pretty much what we're about.
Okay, could you all talk about the embargo and its impact on people's everyday lives there?
Well, I'll say that we visited various polyclinics, which are similar to hospitals here. And one of the smaller groups that we were on, someone asked that question specifically, how's the embargo affecting you? And one of the doctors explained that because the U.S. not only blocks trade to Cuba directly from our country and everyone in it, we're also actively blocking and promoting other countries from trading with Cuba. So one of the outcomes is that when they need certain types of pharmaceutical medicines for their children in Cuba, they, because of the blockade, sometimes have to pay 600 to 700 times the market rate for medicines for young children. And I thought this was a horrendous and horrific strategy that we're employing against them, and it's had some devastating effects.
Okay.
You know, also, I think just following along the lines of the health and medicine, a bunch of our brigade got sick while we were in Cuba, and we received amazing care. Everything you hear about the Cuban healthcare system is true. It really was unbelievable. But a couple of us had to go to the hospital because they were dehydrated.
Wow.
And they will put on IVs to keep them hydrated, to keep water in their bodies. Wow. And it really hurt, apparently, that when the IVs got put in. And apparently one of the brigadistas asked the nurses why it hurts so much. And they said, well, our needles are dull because we can't get them because of the embargo. So have to use, like, lower-grade metal or reuse needles. So they're much more dull, and they hurt the skin. Well, they also didn't have hospital gowns, and So they had to, the nurse, I mean, apparently the nurses were really great and, like, washed the clothing and stuff, but there were no hospital gowns, which here we take for granted as an everyday thing, right? You go to a hospital, you get put in one of those weird-looking gowns.
Yeah.
There, it's, like, not, it's not that simple. A lot of things just get cut out of everyday life because of that.
Wow. Okay, so could you talk a little bit about this recent trip that you guys made and why it was important?
Well, for me, I don't really jump in. I don't know if anybody else is talking, but I think it's it was definitely important to go and visit Cuba and just learn. And I knew very little about the country. I just knew that there. I knew about the revolution. I knew about the values, and I'd heard about their system of healthcare and education. And I knew some people who actually were in the medical school on full scholarship. But I specifically was also interested because of the fact of the travel challenge. And that I believe that it is our duty to stand up against, you know, immoral and unjust laws and this blockade and all the damage that it's doing to these people. These are our brothers and sisters, and I just felt it was very important to, you know, take that type of a stand. And it was beautiful being able to work alongside with the Cuban people, which was another big part of our trip. We did a lot of work. And it gave us a real opportunity to build some relationships with people in a way that we could earn their respect, because I believe we worked, you know, very hard during the trip. And a lot of the folks that we worked with gave us, you know, some credit for that. So it was a great experience on many levels for me.
That's,
you know,
good. So
I just wanted
to ask, what are some follow-up things that you guys plan to do now that you've had the trip and the experience? What are some things that you plan on becoming more actively involved with, I would say?
Well, I actually, could I just say one other thing, that another important reason that we, brigade is just that I felt like also, you know, the so-called president is doing some kind of outrageous stuff this year. Among them are his new laws that just harshen the embargo and the blockade. He wants the country to believe, he wants everyone who's thinking of supporting he wants everyone who's thinking of being against the blockade, or everyone who is against the blockade, to think that they're alone. He wants us to think we're alone. He wants the country to think that there's incredible support for his new laws, which only allow family members, as defined by him, family members, to visit once every 3 years, that kind of thing, in Cuba. And he wants people to think that there's tremendous support for these laws, and there's not. And one of the most important things, you know, every year, of course, it's important to challenge the blockade, to continue to declare that it is our right to go to Cuba, that we don't need any license, we don't need any permission from our government. But especially this year, because George Bush wants this country to be silent about this blockade, and it's important for us not to be. So for us to go there, to come back across the border, to say proudly that, yes, we went to Cuba, yes, there's nothing wrong with that. That, for me, was really important, and to continue to show the Cuban people that we are still in solidarity with them, no matter what our government says or threatens to do to us, that we are still, you know, that we don't follow the same borders as the U.S. government does, and that we are going to be down there working with them, next to them, because that's, you know, who we are, is that they're our brothers and sisters, and that's really important to me, I think, is just to make sure that they know that, too, and that, you know, and that everyone around this country knows that. That they're not the only people who think this blockade is wrong, because really there's not a lot of support for it.
Okay, and also the Bush administration is also claiming that there's rampant child prostitution in Cuba. Coming back from there, could you address that and talk about the lives of children in Cuba as you saw it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really interesting one. We actually heard about that while we were in Cuba with this new speech that Bush had given. And, I mean, it's obviously, to us who were there, and I'll talk about that, but, like, it's obviously another way of Bush fabricating stories about people and fabricating things, the same way that, you know, he fabricated weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and used that as a justification for going in there and trying to dominate a people. And considering other things that have come out in the Bush, you know, from the Bush administration, it seems like, you know, that's something that they're thinking about for Cuba. You know, it's not outlandish to think that. And so when he starts to say things like this that are so outlandishly untrue, and just, you know, have no proof and just come out and say something ridiculous, it's really, really scary. I mean, it was so crazy to be down there and hear this come out and then look around at all the children that we met who, you know, are probably the most articulate young people I've ever met, who are intelligent, who know what's going on, who are in school, who for free, who have cultural, who have, you know, access to sports. I mean, it's unbelievable. The respect and love and attention shown to young people in Cuba is, like, remarkable. All of us coming from where we're from, we get there, and it's amazing. I mean, you're talking about a country that's been blockaded and whatever, and, you know, it's a quote-unquote third world country, and they have a lot of underdevelopment, and the first thing that they're concentrating on is, you know, the first thing that they did was, you know, restore all of their hospitals, and the second thing that they did was restore all of their schools. I mean, the work that we did while we were down there was renovation in school, you know, for young children. We stayed in the school for young children, and it was amazing. I mean, the attention given to young people there is unbelievable. And so for them, for Bush to come out and make such an outrageous claim, it's scary and it's disgusting.
And just to add on quickly, when we were working at the school, there was entire brigades of school children who, during their summer vacations, were voluntarily coming to build their school. So I think in terms of George Bush and his claims against Cuba, he'd be far-pressed to find any school in the United States where students volunteer in mass to come and build, do hard labor construction for free on their schools because of how much pride they have in their school system. So I think that in terms of, you know, that question, it's beyond a lie. It's just more evidence of the fact that he's, you know, a brutal psychopath.
Okay, so could you also tell listeners about the Cuban Five?
Yeah. We actually had the opportunity to meet with some family members of the Cuban Five.
What exactly is the Cuban Five? Can you explain that?
Oh, sorry, okay. The Cuban Five are actually five people who were in Miami infiltrating really ultra-conservative terrorist organizations. So organizations of the most far, far, far right of the Cuban-American community in Miami. There's a number of organizations that have carried out, attempted, and, you know, attacks that have actually gone through, terrorist attacks against Cuba, assassination attacks against Fidel Castro and other leaders of their government. A couple of years ago, there was a series of bombings that took place in Havana, and like targeting the tourist industry, including the death of one Italian tourist. So there's been a lot of stuff that have happened. Cuba decided to send some people in to try to infiltrate and get out some intelligence on these organizations. These organizations operate with the full knowledge of the United States government. Cuba has, you know, talked to the United States government about them and, you know, asked them to do something about it, and the U.S. government just, you know, closes its eye, doesn't do anything. People who are known terrorists are celebrated in Miami. And what happened was these guys went in to try to infiltrate and get some intelligence on these organizations to find out anything that they may be, you know, any terrorist attacks that they may be coming up with against Cuba. After a number of years, the U.S. government arrested these five men and indicted them on a number of charges and found them guilty of a number of charges, including espionage and up to murder. These men have received a ridiculous sentence, you know, going from 15 years, to a double life sentence plus 15 years, and it's outlandish. They had a completely unfair trial in Miami, a city where you couldn't even have the Latin Grammys because people were threatening to blow it up because Cuban singers were going to be getting an award. They had a trial, you know, with five people who were admitted agents of the Cuban government. It was totally absurd. There were a number of other unfair things that went on in the trial, and these five men are, you know, rotting in some of the worst prisons in the United States, federal penitentiaries.
Okay.
They've been under solitary confinement after they were locked up 17 straight months of solitary confinement. So it's been a lot of stuff, and they're struggling for their release. And the Cuban people, I mean, it's amazing. Everywhere you go, people are talking about the five of them, and they're, you know, they want them to return home.
And regarding your question earlier about what people can do, there's Free the Five committees that are both within the United States and are internationally building to, you know, really push for the freedom of these five heroes of the Cuban people. So that's definitely an opportunity for people to get involved. And there's many political prisoners as well. And as we talked to the families, they were, you know, explaining how hard it is just dealing with the fact that they're being barred from even seeing and visiting their relatives and their loved ones. So it's, you know, it's very, very powerful situation that needs our attention.
And you said you met them?
Yeah, we met the families men who were locked up.
Oh, okay. So how can people get involved and support Venceremos?
Well, one thing is we're going to be going again next year. I mean, we'll be challenging the travel restrictions until they're over. And when they're over, we'll be going to have a party. So they can get involved and come on the next brigade. Okay. We have an email address if anybody wanted to email.
Okay, and that email address would be?
It's thebrigade at yahoo.com. They can write and ask for more information. Mm-hmm. We also have a website, which is www.venceremosbrigade.org.
Okay. We've been speaking with Shaka Barrows, Naomi Gordon Lowell, and Bonnie Massey, who all just returned from a Cuba trip as part of the Venceremos Brigade. Any last questions?
I actually had a real quick question. This is, of course, Ernesto here in the studio. And I know we're getting ready to kind of getting close to our time, but I'm wondering if all of you could briefly talk about what this trip did for you or what you learned from this or how this touched your life in some way, and talk a little bit about that and impart that to listeners. A lot of people get some real vague ideas as to what Cuba is and what's going on over there, but I'm wondering if each of you can talk, maybe we'll start with Naomi and then Shaka and then Bonnie, about what you learned and what you really got out of this trip.
You know, I think a lot of times when people travel, they like to get stuff, right? I mean, people like to bring back stuff.
Yeah. So
they get pictures or ashtrays or
so what did you get t-shirts. what did you get
so this is what I'm saying is that that was not, we brought back a lot of stuff from Cuba, but it was not pictures or posters, or maybe we brought back film, but it was not like t-shirts or a little bit of that, but really what we brought back was like an understanding of a totally different reality. Like I can't even explain it except to tell you that when I came back, I was riding my bike to go get my pictures developed today, and I was totally shocked by the amount of brand names and signs and stuff that I saw everywhere on the street. And it was like I felt like totally suffocated almost. It was like so much of, I live in Brooklyn, right? I'm in New York, and I love Brooklyn, but so much of my neighborhood is overrun with things and people talking about things and money and all that stuff that sort of clutters up conversation and keeps people from having real conversation about politics and culture and human beings. And it was kind of like, I would say culture shock, but it was more like a corporate shock. And it's upsetting. But at the same time, it makes you appreciate so much how what we've got there was people. And the time you spend there is eating and talking to people and drinking and really getting into the details of, like, talking about life and what it is to go every day and what it is to have free health care or how hard it is to not have money because of an embargo and how hard it is to, to live life, but also how good life is and all these things that conversations that we forget about in this country because we're so busy talking about stuff and things and money.
Material
and all that
items,
stuff.
Yeah.
Those conversations happened a lot, and I respected that so much about the Cuban people. Like, my Spanish is not even close to anywhere good, but, like, I was able to get that. And I encourage everyone to go to Cuba, like, not even for the, travel challenge. I mean, go for that, too. Go to see the sights, but go to have conversations and understand what it's like to be in a reality that's not based around stuff. That's what I got from it.
Okay, Shaka?
Well, I learned a lot. I definitely, for me, I didn't realize there was that many black people down there. And as a black man, that was, something that because of the lack of just any connection, I knew there was a diversity, but I just didn't know how. It was just very eye-opening to me. And just to feel a lot of warmth and love from the people immediately, it was very powerful. But mostly to see a country that has so little, doing so much for its people, really put this country to shame on a level that blew my mind. I mean, I learned that after the revolution, they had 3,000 doctors, and today they've trained and have on the island more than 70,000 doctors. And everywhere we went, we were able to see a doctor, and nobody ever was asked to pay for anything. No one was turned away. Everyone received direct one-on-one attention, and the level of shame that I have in our system is so deep now because it's unfathomable the fact that they are so much further ahead of us. We were working to build a school for over 1,100 children, and everybody was working on the school. The principal was working alongside of the cooks, alongside of the teachers, alongside of the students. Everybody was doing hard labor on the school to build a school that had a 20 student per teacher ratio, even though there was over 1,000 students in this elementary school. And so there's this tremendous level of community that exists there that just simply does not exist here. I believe we have a system that has rotted our humanity, and it reeks to me now on a level that is very strong and very real, because of just seeing how they worked with such little resources, and they accomplished things that just simply put us to shame.
So it was a very inspirational trip for you then, right?
Oh, it was tremendously inspirational, but it also it puts my heart in a heavy place, because I live in communities where they're closing elementary schools.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's as much as I was inspired, it also leaves me with a heavy heart and mm-hmm. a lot of just shame for, you know, what we're all accepting on
exactly.
some level or another. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And Bonnie, what did you get out of this trip?
Yeah, I was definitely striking what they're saying. And then just add with that, to add just our trip home and knowing how when we stand together and, you know, it was us. It was, you know, buses from Canada who had our back and people from Buffalo and just, I mean, all these different people from different organizations. Like, when we came together, we were able to really get our point across and really do something that was really powerful and really challenge, you know, these recent measures by Bush and what they're doing to try to keep people separate. So that was powerful for me.
Okay, you've been listening to 90.1 KPFT, and we've been speaking with Shaka Barrows, Naomi Gordon-Lowell, and Bonnie Massey of Vinceremos Brigade.